Okay, I'm rolling. All right. Find a seat. G'day. Right, I'm just trying to set up some recording stuff. So I've got various cameras running. Basically, I'm the target of the cameras, not you guys. And I have another one as well. So what I'm setting up now, if I can get it unlocked, is yet another camera. And I don't know how this is going to work. Okay. Now this is a toy that we've got on loan from Telstra, which is just a mobile phone, but it has an application in it that connects back to a web server, and it's broadcasting, or about to start broadcasting, out to that web server, and this will also be recorded. Now, that should be running now. So one of the issues with trying to use a camera phone as a camera is how do you attach stuff to it. So high-tech bit of blue tack on a tripod, and how well that's going to work is part of what I'm playing with right now. So what I'm going to do, see if I can point that up at maybe where I'll be standing. I don't know, you might want to adjust the angles. Pretty good. Okay, whoops. Now, let us see if this is going to work. This is a bit of a digression, but I thought it and I literally just thought of doing this yesterday, so it's once again possibly flying a little bit by the seat of my pants. But this is the website that this camera is broadcasting to, hopefully. And with a little bit of luck, the Bluetooth headset is picking up my audio. Now, I haven't had a chance to test that yet because I just got it working yesterday and I haven't done a recording with it. But we'll just see how that goes. Now, I'm logged in. My profile. Please wait, we're connecting you. Okay. So hopefully... Oh, there we go. Okay. So there's the multimedia speakers. Now, if I tap this mic, yeah, it's coming through this mic here as opposed to the phone. So that's working. I'll just turn my speakers off for the moment. Oh. I should. All right. Okay. Well, we probably won't worry about. I'm not going to leave that feed running. But that is going out the a 3G network. So it's got a 3G card in it, and it's making a video conference call, if you like, from the phone to the web, and that's being recorded. We'll be able to play that back later. And the idea of this is that we're looking for an option or a method where students, when they're out on teaching rounds, can capture themselves, and we can record that evidence. And they can then bring that back to us. So whether they use a flip cam, like something like that sitting on the table there, or something like this, which is a little bit more expensive and high tech, or cameras on tripods, with or without wireless microphones, depending on the sound quality. and the nurses are looking at using point of view headgear, trying to get them to demonstrate practice of doing things like taking blood pressures and stuff. Now, how well that will work is something I'm a little bit skeptical about. But anyway, so there's all this technology that we're basically what they're trying to do is figure out ways of saving cost, because it's very expensive to have a supervisor drive out to Coleraine or wherever it might be that our students are placed and supervise. Now, there's pros and cons in doing this, but filming yourself and reviewing that video is actually good practice. And I would recommend that anyone do that as a way of saying, did I really say 52 times? Because you don't notice it when you're doing it.
It is part of some TV, isn't it? I know Emu try and get a recording of himself using whatever tool and bring that to the TV, don't they?
Yeah. Yeah.
But it's not something people aim to do freely.
Yeah, it's maybe a little intimidating having all these cameras pointing at you.
I did record it, but it just didn't work.
So. Yeah. Right, so that's something that, as teachers, you may well find in the future that students coming out and on rounds may well be asked to, asking you to film them. Potentially, or set up, or can I set up a camera at the back of the classroom, and you know, we'll get the backs of the heads of the kids while I'm reading to them, but the target is me as opposed to the children in the classroom. And there's all sorts of issues about how do we do that? Can we do that? You know, and we're trying to negotiate all that stuff right now, and also trying to get ethics approval to do it in classrooms so they can write up the results and all that sort of stuff. And that's a real nightmare for them. It's not something I'm doing, luckily. But okay, so that's all the camera stuff. I'll get rid of this MView thing. But this is, just as an aside, the CFA and Tasmanian Firefighting and Queensland Search and Rescue are looking at using these sorts of cameras on choppers so that they can get a live feed back to an incident control room and see what's happening, you know, on the fire ground, back up in Learmonth Road, where I'll be working. And so that sort of thing, this sort of technology is going to become more and more pervasive in our lives. So let's go back here. Well, even, I mean, the idea is that, you know, potentially people on firefighters can wear this sort of stuff. I mean, this is, these are set up, this comes from America, it's quite expensive, $500 or so, and police wear these in some cases for capturing video when they're out of the car and, you know, talking to people. And even now we have, if you get pulled over by a TAC car, they will have a camera in the front and the rear windscreen filming everything, and the policeman's got a little digital data recorder recording what he's saying to you and what you're saying to him, and all of that sort of stuff. So it's all happening. Okay. So...
No,
well, it actually... it makes life... Everybody becomes more constrained by it, for better or worse. Yeah. Okay. So here, this is what I'm here today to talk to you about. And if I plug the speakers back in, hopefully... we'll be able to hear something. Now, are you able to get onto the web? Are you having issues?
We're all on subscription.
Happening?
After a restart. No, it
came up.
Yeah, okay.
All right. This will be a bit of a test of the sound.
Welcome to your Sort-Made Interesting webinar. If you have any additional sites to this list, feel free to send me an email to rupert.russell@acu.edu.au. Thank you.
Okay, so I chose to be a furry rodent. And the rodent plays with the mouse. It will look at the mouse if you move the mouse around for what it's worth. And there are other avatars. So this is a tool that is being used in classrooms for lots of different purposes, but and English
all sorts of things where basically you can record yourself and play it back in, you know, a non-threatening sort of... it's not you up there, it's not a piece of video, and it doesn't even have to be your voice. It does have text to speech, so you can give it a piece of text and it will give you a synthetic voice and read it out. So that's one little thing I thought I'd have a play with. Now, what I've done, have you got access to this site? Have you got the address for this? You can follow along. What I thought I'd do is show you some of the sites. I made a selection of what I call the top 10 and found that I ended up with 25. And in no particular order, but I thought I'd just start off by showing you some of these that I've put in here. So that was top 10, just under the... Yeah. Okay. And as I say, they didn't come out. I just threw this together at 3 in the morning or something, so I didn't sort them into any particular order.
Things that are
great for now. Yeah, no. Okay, so the way this works, I've taken a screenshot of the site and linked, in most instances the screenshot will be linked to the site. In some cases I've forgotten to do that. But if you click on the screenshot, it should take you off to the particular site, which should be hopefully live. And the way this works is a timeline going back from when life was not even on the earth up to the present day, and we can look at what it was like during the ice ages, and that gets broken down into subzones, and we get a bit of a few objects from fossils that have been discovered from those particular times. So I thought that was a nice site, interactive. Nice to be able to have a play with this and open it up and get various time zones out of it. Now, one thing that I've discovered about myself, I'm definitely into maps, and I suspect that reflects the fact that I'm, and also artwork, and so I'm pegging myself as a visual learner, but I would say that that's certainly a strong element in what I'm interested in and what engages me when I'm looking at websites. So a lot of this stuff will have a visual element to it. This one here is a street directory, and we can zoom in, and so it's openstreetmaps.org. If you click over on the URL, that will take you to the actual site. And we can see where we are, more or less. Where are we? Somewhere. Here. Somewhere like that. Okay. So that's another one that I was quite intrigued by and thought worked well. Now, this is another mapping site, World Mapper. And this is quite interesting because the way this site uses maps is it generates maps in order to convey or give you various data sets in a visual representation. And this one that's animating now on the screen is internet usage by country from the year 2000 to 2007. And you'll see that Africa does not feature very prominently. And initially, New Zealand was punching heavier than its weight. It was a little bit bloated, and now it's over time shrinking down to sort of, by comparison with other countries, its population is not in excessly represented. And you can see that America starts off quite large, and then slowly, as the rest of the world picks it up, America shrinks down to more reasonable proportions. Now, so if you click on the World Mapper, you'll see that there's all sorts of maps, hundreds of maps that they've created that produce or display different data sets. And some of them are animations. This one, there's world population, and if you So we've got Australia. It was a little bit hard to see the outline of Australia, but it's there. And it's just showing us, apparently, as Australians, although we tend to start in the outback, we're actually the, of all the countries in the world, we live in cities more than any other country. We have very few people actually living out, out in our imagined spaces out there where we all sort of tend to picture ourselves. We actually live in cities predominantly, and we can see that here, and it's Melbourne and Sydney that are the obviously the two big ones. But it's an interesting way. I really quite like the way that they're using this the data in order to produce maps. And so you can go and look at the world populations of not just Australia, but any most or all countries in the world and map it that way. Another set of maps. This is something a little bit dear to my heart. I actually love the Melway. As a kid, I used to just open it up and just look at it and read it and kind of imagine myself in the various places. And this was a fantastic discovery. This is the very first Melway ever published. So this is edition one. And I used to live on map 60. And I used to live just about there. In Camberwell, where are we? About here. Now, the reason that this is interesting is that it's a snapshot in time. And a while ago I went back to Camberwell and went to have a look at the swimming pool that I used to swim at, which used to be up here next to Camberwell High School. Well, guess what? The pool doesn't exist anymore. They've filled it in and the high school's grown over the top of it. And that was a bit of a shock. But one of the things that I find quite interesting is to have a look at all the drive-ins that used to exist and where they were. So you go and look at drive-in, it's these red triangles, and if you go and look at where they were and then you look at a current map, you'll find that they've turned into all sorts of different things. Some of them are office complexes. Coles Myer have their offices on the location of an old drive-in in Toorak, and others have become housing estates and all sorts of things. So that's something I thought was interesting, just to be able to compare and contrast the growth of a city over time. And that goes through, there's various editions online, so up to edition 5, that there's maps there. Anyway, yet more maps. Now, I'm assuming that you are all familiar with the concept of Web 2. Is anyone a little unsure about how Web 2 differs from Web 1, or what those terms would mean? Yep, okay. Web 1 is pretty much where I come from. If you look at my website, hopefully there's useful stuff on there, but its format is probably a little bland in some ways, and it is definitely Web 1 in that what I'm doing with my website is I'm publishing information to users. There's not really any way for users to interact with my website. And in fact, I don't actually even have a blog or a wiki running at the moment. I have used them, but currently I'm not. And I was tempted to set one up for this, but I just sort of ran out of time. And but so Web 1 is an environment where there is a publisher creating material, sifting material, making it available to an audience. And that audience is basically just a set of consumers. Okay.
What program do you use?
I use Dreamweaver.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well,
yes and no. It's becoming more. There are more plugins and things and stuff you can do with it. But yeah, Dreamweaver is basically a web editor. Enables me to edit my pages and push them up onto the web. And So that is pretty much that model of me creating the content and making it available to others. Now, I did define all of these sites as whether they are web 1 or web 2, but it made the page a bit too wide, and ideally you shouldn't need to scroll left and right on a web page, although this data projector has changed my screen resolution, so we do need to scroll a little bit. But I took that column out because I didn't think it was really that relevant. But something like this site, web 1. They've put the content up online, we can use it and look at it, we can't modify it. Not online. Okay. It's static, if you like. This site, however, is not. This is a Web 2 environment. And the way I can tell that, I don't know if we can kill these lights, maybe. Might make life better. Up here, it's probably a little hard to read on the big screen, but it says, thanks, Daniel, it says edit map. And that immediately puts it into a Web 2 category. Is that alright with the lights out? Mm-hmm. Yep. Although my cameras are going to struggle now. Yeah, it doesn't matter, it's fine. Okay, so I can use this map and just view it and get the data out of it. Oops, didn't really want to do that. So here we have, if I've done it right, Ballarat. And if we zoom in a little bit further, we'll see that on this map, somebody, lo and behold, has flagged Australian Catholic University, Ballarat campus. Any guesses as to who that might have been? So it's a Web 2 environment. I can come in here as just anybody, member of the public, and I can highlight areas and flag them on this map. And the idea is that the people who set up this map are attempting to get pretty much, you know, large portions of the earth tagged by people. Now, how many people will end up doing that, who knows. But it is an interesting thing because it's the sort of thing that you hopefully will be able to get access to through firewalls and the like. And you could have your, find your schools, which almost definitely won't be flagged at present, and tag them. And you can also tag other points, any other points of interest that might be relevant to your environment. Okay, so that's the Web 2 concept, okay, where the user becomes, or where the consumer becomes the producer. Okay, we are consuming the information on these maps, but we can also produce information and put it up and make it available to people as well. And that's the difference between Web 1 and Web 2. So that's a site which I thought was quite nice. Once again, visual, mappy, and definitely something that I'm you know, going to get right into having a play with. So, yeah, well, yeah, and all that sort of mapping stuff is really important too, you know, tracking fires and all of that sort of stuff, you know, working out the spread and the rate of progression and all of that sort of thing, predicting where they're going to be in 2 hours, 5 hours, 2 days. Okay, all right, something visual but not maps. Does anyone know this site? Anyone played with it?
Yeah.
Okay. It's definitely a great site, and it works particularly well when you use texts from the Gutenberg project. And the Gutenberg project is a group of people who got together and said, okay, let's put online any text that we can find that's not copyright, as opposed to the Google Books, which is basically just going and, you know, putting up current content. Gutenberg's going and getting things that are out of copyright. So this is Blinky Bill. And so I got the entire text of Blinky Bill, plugged it into here, and we can see that Blinky comes up quite a bit, and so does a few other things, tree and koala and Mrs. And there's other words in there as well. Now, That's an interesting thing, because you put things like Lord of the Flies and, you know, I mean, any book like that that you can find, pull off Gutenberg and whack it in, and you get an interesting sense of the characters immediately jump right out at you, you know, because of a very high incident rate. Now, here's a little secret, a guilty secret. I suffer from dyslexia, and sites like this, when I found it, I was really happy to find this site, because it's an online spelling checker, and so we can put in here, check our spelling, one of those will be wrong, it's that one there, and if I click on it, it will give me suggestions similar to what Microsoft Word will do. Okay, but really useful definitions, and that's the bit that I particularly like about this. Now, it only works on small chunks of text, the free one. You can download and buy a plug-in for Word, but for just checking small, and I get my kids to do this when they're writing in the journals and stuff, I'll get them to use this as a way of checking their spelling without needing, you know, an adult to do that for them. So that's a great site. I love that one. Okay, I'm also trying to get my kids to learn to touch type. And because people will say, oh, you know, we've got drag and dictate and computers will get to the point where we're going to be able to talk at them and stuff. Yeah, that's great. But can you imagine 20 people all talking at their computers at once in the room? I personally don't see it happening in our working lifetimes. Okay. We will need computers that are orders of magnitude more powerful than what we have at the moment. We'll really need quantum type computing power in order to be able to do that, and we'll need and that's, you know, probably I seriously think 15 years, 20 years away before that really becomes a reality, if it ever does, and if it's ever actually really that usable in some environments. Certainly for an individual person working in an office, it would be great. But we're kind of getting there slowly, but you have to train the software and you need to train it to your voice, and it's only about 90% accurate anyway, and so I seriously believe that if we are not giving kids the opportunity to learn to touch type in schools, we are seriously doing them a disservice, because to me, it's one of those things that are fundamental, like being able to read and write. If you can't read and write when you leave school, something's gone wrong. And I believe if you can't touch type by the time you've left high school at least, and possibly even primary school, because you've got probably in some ways more time to do it there, we've also done our kids a disservice. Because when I started at university, I was a two-finger typist, and I could do about 20 words a minute. And I thought, okay, well, that's pretty good, but I'm going to force myself to touch type. And so I went from 20 words or plus to 20 minutes a word. You know, it was torturous, but I can now touch type. So as well as getting a university degree, I also came out of it with, you know, I can now, when I'm going well, do about 40 words a minute. And not only is it an improvement in speed, but I don't have to be looking at the screen. I can actually read off, I can type something off a book and type it into the computer. And although we can scan text and OCR it and all of that sort of thing, the ability to be able to do it just, you know, ad hoc, short little bits, is very useful. So, seriously, I would recommend trying to squeeze the, some touch typing time into every child's week, would be my... If I had the ability to wave a wand and say we're going to add something to the curriculum, and everyone's going to go, that's great, it'd be touch typing. Anyway,
that's pretty good. You can do up to 80.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Mm. And there are quite a lot of jobs that you can only get if you can work at that sort of speed.
Mm. With good accuracy. Actually.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
But
probably all type 100.
Yeah. Look, seriously, I really do think that, I mean, like, how many people here how many of you can touch type? Yeah. And I don't know whether you feel the same way, but I definitely think it's well worthwhile. Okay.
I would presume Rupert a lot with the kids. Yeah, unless I suppose they're touch typing and they're SMS text, chatting online. And
well, but yeah, I mean, touch typing is a specific skill. You need to use the correct fingers in the correct posture, and you need to learn to do it without looking at the keyboard, so that it's not something that you will just learn unless you are disciplined in your approach.
I find a lot of kids have got a fairly high typing speed, but it's not actually touch typing.
Yeah, yeah. And the problem then becomes, like I did, going from 20 words a minute with two fingers, quite, reasonably efficient, to then going, oh, now I'm really, really slow and this is really painful, but I'm going to put the effort in. And therefore, the quicker people become with those two fingers, or one finger or whatever, the harder it then becomes to go back, because you really do lose your productivity. Here's a site which I thought was a nice one. You can make your own road signs. So, go away. It would help if I was actually on the site and not just on an image. Mm-hmm. Anyway, there you go. Make more signs. And there's a whole lot of different sites, a whole lot of different signs that they have, different formats. But a bit of fun, easy to use, and you just all sorts of things you could do with that type of stuff. Okay. Now, art stuff. This is a great site. National Gallery for Kids. And it's got a whole lot of interactive tools. They're Java based. Oh, sorry, Shockwave, which hopefully will work for me on this one. I did choose the biggest one to load. Okay, I probably won't worry about loading that one, but you can have it play. A whole lot of different things you can do with these interactive applications. Some of them are bit quicker. Yeah, and they're great. I like them. I really enjoy playing with these. Okay. So this is about symmetry. Let's do hexagonal grid. So how do tiles work? How does wallpaper work? All of that sort of stuff. Different types of symmetrical patterns, really good fun, easy to use, quite, hours of fun really, mucking around with it and changing designs and stuff. So there's a whole lot of those there, I really like that. Another arty one. Now this is a site that is really amazing. And it probably will take a little while to load. Digital artist creating computer programs that produce the artworks. And this one here called Particle Touch it's got a little video of it demonstrating it. Now this is written in a program called Processing, which is an open source free application, and you can just download it and put it on your computer. And I've started playing with it, and it's quite a good programming environment if you're interested in working with graphical elements. Video's having problems streaming, but you get the idea. Touch screen, interactive piece of software that generates an artwork. So it was that one. Something different? VoiceThread. I only discovered this the other day when I was looking through the web trying to find some stuff to put in different ways and the like, and this is great. I really like this.
To work this out, I would do 30 plus 60 equals 90. 8 plus 1 equals 9.
2 environment. You log in, create yourself an account. You can choose to add a picture of yourself, or you can pick.
So, looking at this problem, I would do 7 times 3 equals 21.
This one's not as interesting. Well, this is what this person has chosen to use this tool for. There are many ways of using this. And so it's that just happened to be a maths example, or a couple of maths examples. But you could put up anything. You could draw a picture and you could put it up and you could get the kids to say, well, what is this? How would you use it? How could you improve on this image? If it's a map, or if it's look, there's any number of ways that you could put up something that then the children then interact with and describe or comment on, or they can put their own images up and explain what it is, and then you could have a story. You could have a picture and the child could be telling a story about it, and it could be like a never-ending story. Then someone comes in and adds the next bit to it, and you know, it just uses that initial frame as a jumping off point.
So would they be able to then access it at home too, and work on it there?
Yeah, one week. Yep. You could sign in right now and you could add to those. An interesting site. Lots of possibilities. VoiceThread.
It says that the homepage collaboration made simple. So you could be collaborating across the world at the same time as well?
Yeah, of course. It's on the web. So if you can get to the web, you can join in and play with this site.
And it's recording as well as...
Yeah, so you plug a microphone in and just record your comments. So you just headset, basically, on a laptop works well.
The first thing is the image itself. If you want to get a better look at it, click on the image to zoom in and look around. You can try this right now while I'm talking. Just click once to go in and once to get out. And while you're zoomed in, you can move your mouse around and pull the picture in any direction you want.
Okay. So So
the next thing, which is really the most important, is how to comment. The first thing you need to know is that you are always in control and you can always delete your own comment. Just click this button icon and you'll see playing, and then you can try it again. So don't sweat it and just say whatever's on your mind. After you've looked around at this VoiceThread and you register, click the comment button that's right down here, and you can try out all five different ways to comment. The last thing is how to get around in a VoiceThread. There are two ways to hear comments. First, just flip a person's face like mine over there, or you can use the controls that are beneath the type of record buttons over here. To go through all of the other ways to voice them, you can either use big arrows that are in each corner, or click on the navigator button over here. And if you click on that, it will show you all of the faces at once, and you can then click on the one you want to go to. The rest of this book is going to show you individual pages from the voice thread you really like, and also show you a couple of tricks that are voice thread you can perform.
Okay, I'm Pat Booth, and I'm the happy mother here in this picture of these children, some of whom appear to have anxiety disorders. Let's see. I don't know why they look unhappy, because I'm their mother, and they should be happy. I think that we were on our that this was a passport photo, and we were on our way to Nigeria, and their daddy had gone off and left us to make this trip alone. And so getting all these people together for that passport photo was not easy. Now, in the background, my husband is making an excuse for having left us, saying that there was a civil war going on and that we actually couldn't go with him. And maybe that's why these people look unhappy here. Anyway, I can only say I hope that they grew up to be happier than this.
I think I'm so unhappy because what could have just happened is that Chris must have teased me really badly. He's the one who smiled very happily. And when I explained to Mother, she probably scolded me. That's why I'm sad. And Kathy looks like she's about to kill someone, but we all know that now that she just had very bad eyesight and didn't have glasses yet.
Okay. So, lots of different ways of using it. A really interesting Web 2 application. Yeah. Okay. This one, I only just discovered the other day, which is basically like Wordle, but the thing that's interesting about this is that you can apply the words to different shapes and it will put your words into whatever shape you select. And the thing that's even better than that is you can add your own images. So that map of Australia is a map that I pulled off one of the mapping sites that I've got on my website, and I created a map of Australia shape. Got as close as that voice thread. Okay, so yeah, very similar to, but more powerful than Wordle. Another one that's interesting, I thought.
Hi, my name is Charlene, and in 2008 I set off with a backpack and a digital video camera to visit 80 schools around the world. The aim of the project is to visit 80 schools around the world, connecting education, communities, and business. from desert into jungles and mountains, volcanoes and lithium. I started my journey in Wales and travelled across the United Kingdom and Europe. I then journeyed into Africa, where I travelled into Uganda visiting Buddhist orphanages. I met some amazing people on this journey and made some friends for life. I travelled 3,000 kilometres across India, visiting remote geographic locations, looking at how children live and work in this environment. I visited many schools.
I haven't had a chance to really look around this site much because I only found it last night, but from what I can gather, there's a whole lot of content in there that she's captured over that journey, and would be an interesting way of comparing and contrasting different schools, different, you know, places that kids live and environments that they experience. Good sort of conversation starting material, I would imagine. Okay. How many of you have whiteboards, interactive whiteboards? Yeah. So you'd be familiar with some of this sort of stuff. These tools work really well with interactive whiteboards, but you can use them just on a with a mouse and data projector as well. And this is fun because, look, I can take my base 10 block and I can split it apart. And then I can take this and I can break it up again. The only thing I can't do, which is a real shame, is I can't drag and capture all of that as one object. They are now individual objects and I would have to move them individually. But I can reassemble them back into one object, which I can then move, and I could reassemble that as well. Now that's just one of the manipulatives in this set, and one that I thought was fantastic, and you can have more than one on the screen at a time, and I haven't quite learnt. It's a real shame you can't grab them all in one hit. That's the one thing that's a pity about this application. I'll just get them out of the way. And I haven't used it a lot, so there's obviously a way of deleting that, but I'll just shove them aside. Do you know about geoboards? Mm-hmm. Well, this one, the rubber bands will never get flicked across the room. and so on and so forth. So pretty good, useful, fun, free, and would work presumably fantastically on a smart board. So that's a nice site, and it's got clock faces and all sorts of stuff there. Now here's another one that's very similar, but interestingly enough, I had a look at the geoboard one on this one, and it wasn't nearly as nice as the big rubber bandy one the other tools had, but another set of tools, similar concept, which would work well on a whiteboard. I don't know what I'm doing here. Let's see if I can. Anyway, you get the idea. Whole series of different. And we could try and play Tetris or something. Okay, so that's that one. So a couple of those. Here's an oldie and a goodie. Do you know the lemonade stand?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, this is a really nice one. A little bit of animation, not too much. Just enough, I would think, really, to sort of liven it up a bit. So it's going to be raining. Let's make, I don't know, one sign's probably too many. We'll charge only the modest 6 cents, and we'll go and we'll make 10 and will probably do terribly. Yep. But pretty good. Nice interface. Just enough sort of animation and noise to make it a little bit sort of lively, but not so much. Some of them are a little extreme. And it also tells you what the weather was like. So it gives you the prediction. So it says it's going to be sunny. And we go, great, let's make 5 signs and we'll charge 25 cents a glass and we'll make 50 glasses and we'll probably still make a loss. And we don't have enough money. Oh dear. Okay, so let's make only 10 glasses and 3 signs. And we made a profit. And it was hot and sunny. But sometimes it predicts that it was, that it'll be sunny, but it actually says, oh, it was rainy. So that's nice. I kind of quite like that one. So that's that one. Now, this is an interesting site. This is a class that's run, I'm not even sure that I identified which university it comes from, but it's a class on social media and open education, University of Regina. And here's a little bit of video that they made to promote themselves. But what's interesting about this is that everyone who does the class makes a wiki, and so you can go and look at the wikis of all the students who've done this class, and you can. And this is where I found quite a few of these interesting things, because I was trawling through all their stuff and they're going, oh, look at this Bocky, it's great, and have a look at this one. Found this really useful. So this is just through trawling through the students who've done this class and looking at their blogs is where I found a lot of this material. But I'll just play the video anyway, with a little bit of light entertainment. In the stream. Definitely useful. Some interesting people have done this, and I put some interesting stuff up on the web. Now, you don't necessarily have to, you know, look through it all yourself, but it is there. You can go and have a look at that stuff. Do you know about the Wayback Machine or the Internet Archive? Okay, it's an interesting site. We all know the web's changing dramatically over time, and some sites more rapidly than others, and occasionally it might be nice or really useful to be able to go and look at something in its previous incarnations. Now, the Wayback Machine, it doesn't archive everything, because it couldn't, but it does have quite a lot. It's even got my site on it. And so it's gone to my site at various times over the past years and grabbed a snapshot of the homepage. And so we can go way back to 2006 and have a look at what it was like. It's like the cache in Google. Okay, so this is what my page was like on that day when it grabbed that copy. And it's August 19. And at that point I had a little application that told people whether I was in my office or not, and just went on my site. Anyway, so that's what it looked like. So some things have changed a bit, some things haven't. I still use the same picture.
Yeah, like
which isn't really me anymore. But one day I'll update that. But I actually kind of quite like using the old one in some ways. It's kind of a friend from the past.
Do the links
still
work?
Some will be live and others are not. But the links aren't necessarily going to work. Okay. So you just throw in a site and you can go and see what your school site looked like, you know, a few years ago or whatever. So that's the Wayback Machine or the Internet Archive. And then sometimes I've found it incredibly useful. In my job, teachers will give me a website, and I've linked to a website and it's gone offline, and I've just got the address, and then I can go back to the Wayback Machine and find out what that site was, and then do a Google search on the text that was on that page at that time, and then I'll find where it's moved to.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes. So it can be...
They'd like you.
Mm. Yes, it's really great to be able to do that. Okay, you're a miracle worker. It's like, oh, I just know it's all. Delicious. Some of you are familiar with it already and have been using it.
Not many of us.
Okay. It's a social bookmarking.
Gave it a plug, but we didn't get much further.
Okay. I use it a lot. I use it basically just for myself. It's a good spot for me to be able to throw stuff. When I find it, it's interesting. You know, you'll find something and you go, oh, I'll remember that, and you know you won't. So I go, okay, well, that site's going to be useful for me at some point. I don't really know why, but I'm sure I'm going to want to go back there. So I will just throw it in here. And it's really just for me. But if other people find it useful, well, that's great. Okay. And so I've got the Melway site, and I've got various other sites that I've been collecting. And when I've been collecting them to put into this talk and presentation, I was tagging them with CEO. So I've got a few tagged with CEO. Some of them I've been tagging with 5 stars. So these are all the sites that I've given 5 stars to out of my list. So depending on how you tag it, it can be more or less useful to you. The star rating, I think, is actually a kind of useful one. It's not something I've been doing for very long, but it's a handy way of just categorising stuff and keeping it available to you on any computer that's on the web. And that's another thing that's really useful. You go to someone else's office or whatever and you go, oh, what was that site? I've got it in my email, or I've got it, you know, in my favourites on that computer. But, you know, if you've put it in here, you just go in there and dig it out. And another thing that's really nice is that you can email this stuff. So here's my site. I can say, what can I say? For Danielle. And maybe Helen would be interested in this as well.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah. take a look. That's this one, whatever. And when I do that, an email goes off with the link to the site. Pretty easy. From Delicious, I just put those email addresses in. It's just got an address book and it remembers who I've sent them to previously. And it's just, yeah, it's really quick and easy.
And do you follow other people on Delicious?
Sometimes. What I will sometimes do is I'll find a site and I'll go, oh, that was really interesting. Hey, look, 4 other people on Delicious know about Melway number 1. I wonder who those map-inspired people are. Yeah. And, well, there's 3. There's me and there's 3 others. And so I could go, well, what's this person into? Maybe they've got a whole lot of mapping stuff that's great. So occasionally I'll do that, yes. To be honest, I tend to use it just for my own repository. But it certainly should be something that you could search. The only problem is, because everybody uses different tags, sometimes, so Melways, I've used Melway, not Melways. this person's used Mel Way, not Mel Ways, and so therefore if I search for Mel Way, I get those. So that is a slight problem. People will tag things in different ways, but you can mix and match tags and add them together and that sort of thing. So yes, I probably should use it that way more when I'm looking for research. I haven't really done that a lot. But certainly
it's another social networking tool, isn't it?
Yes, yeah. But I certainly do use it for spreading the word. You know, find a site and go bang, 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 send. Yeah. And it's good. And people will come back and say, oh, that was really useful. You know.
Can you make it private?
Yes, you can. Yeah. You can also do that. Yeah. Yep, yep. So you can just keep it private for yourself as well. So that's... it's pretty useful. I use it a lot. I've got, I don't know where.
So if you went to a website.
Yeah, okay, right. Okay, so let's find a site. Let's do Lemonade Stand. I've probably got it in there already. Let me, hang on a sec, just bear with me. Okay, let me do, this one, Smart Pen. Do you know about Smart Pens? Good, I've got a toy to show you.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, the Livescribe.
Okay. Livescribe pen. Yep, anyway, if...
yeah.
I've got one. Yeah. I've managed to borrow one from Sue, actually. Lent it to me. I've lent mine to someone else today for them to use.
I've got mine in the bag, too.
Oh, okay. All right. Okay. Here's how we can use Delicious. Here's a page on my website, just so happens, that I think you guys might be interested in. So I'm going to grab the address. So just copy the URL. And then I go to Delicious. And I am signed in as me. Hi, Rupert Russell. So I can simply go Save New Bookmark. And it wants to know what's the address. And there it is. That's the one I need to save. And if I haven't saved it already, which I haven't, it's gone and pulled the title off the page. Sometimes it will do that and sometimes it won't. Depends on how the page is set up, whether it's got a title or not. I can add some notes, a list of resources, Smart Pen, links and videos. Okay, so you can put in some notes. You can tag it. Now, tags are how you then retrieve stuff and search for it, so Smart Pen would make sense, wouldn't it? And I've already got 18 sites tagged with Smart Pen. Pedagogy. 81 sites that I have tagged with Pedagogy. Data gathering. Data, I've tagged 6 with data, and data gathering is another tag I use. And then maybe audio. Whoops, use the right keys. Audio, I've tagged 20 with audio, and that'll do for the moment. Now, I'll send it off to Helen. Now, there should be... here we go. There's my address book of people that I've... email addresses that I've sent stuff to, but I could add someone else to that. Someone wants to give me their email address, I can pop you in.
Yeah,
yeah. C, full stop, or just all what?
No, all one.
P.
PRUNTY. That's FB Dunstown. Double N, sorry.
Right.
Not Catholic. .edu.
Okay. Message. Okay, and save. So off it goes. The message is just my Smart Pen site, and you'll get an email from that system with the link back to that site. And you also are now on my list of people that I can send stuff to. Okay. Yes.
Sorry, I missed that.
Sure. Okay.
No, just the bit where you sent it to someone. Where did you get that from?
Okay. So let me go. If you edit or create a site, so here's the address. Here's the title. So it's the four.
Yeah.
And then and I can just type see, there you are. And then I can put in a message. Site to look at, and if I click in here, it hasn't given me the address book. I'm not quite sure why not. But if I just put in initials, it's looking people up. I'd send it to myself. But yeah, four and message.
So when you go to edit any of those,
I could. Yes. Yep. And when you create a new one, so if I create a new one, let me go and. Bit of blatant advertising. I'll send off this one. Where am I? So that's an address. Create a new one. Cool Stickers Group. Four. And there's my address book because it's a new one. Editing doesn't seem to bring the address book up, but a new one brings it up. And I can just pick people and pull them off. So I could, I don't know. We don't really want to send that, but yeah. Danielle, and you get the idea, and you go, duh, 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 and all these people get a message that goes, blatant self promotion. and off it goes. But I won't do that one. Okay, so a useful site. Cancel. My website, just as an aside, costs me $9 a month for hosting, and I could probably get that cheaper if I really did shop around a bit, and $22 for 2 years to register the name. And it's actually surprisingly easy to get yourself a website. And if you're lucky, you can be the first person to have tried to use your name at id.au. So this is .id.au is a domain, a group of domain names that are based around people's names. You don't have to have an ABN, you don't have to be an organisation, you don't have to be a non-profit, you don't have to be anybody except a person. You just have to be an Australian citizen or resident in order to qualify for a .id.au site. And literally in half an hour or so you could set yourself up with a website. And it's really not hard. It's remarkably easy. And this is, I use a site called WebCity for my hosting. And so if we just go WebCity Australia. And we can check domain names. So we're not interested in .com.au or .net.au or .com or .net, so I'm going to deselect all of those. What I'm interested in is .id.au. And so is someone interested in throwing their name in?
Me.
Danielle? Is that right? Hopefully I spelled it right. Search for that. And the answer is available. If I spelled it right, did I spell it right? D-A-N-I.
Danielle,
good. Okay, so for $22.50 you can register that name for 2 years. That gives you the address. That's like getting a post office box. Okay. You then have to pay for some space on the web somewhere to put stuff. So the next step is to choose what do you want, how much do you want to pay. And so with this company, from $6 a month, but to be honest, I would suggest you would go with Business Starter. The reason being because you can use Dreamweaver and do FTP with that, but you can't with the Easy Site. With the Easy Site, you have to use their site building tools. That's why it's easy, but limited. With the next one up, you can use FTP and Dreamweaver and all of that. So that will cost you for a year just on $100 or thereabouts. So for just over $100 you can start a website.
And if you've got Dreamweaver, it's really quick and easy to use, and you can use it in whatever way you want. So this is something I wasn't quite thinking of doing here, but I am going to... Are people interested in this? Let me just show you how easy it is. My computer's running a tad slowly for some reason. There's Dreamweaver. Dreamweaver is down. It's not a cheap product, but it's... And there are free ones that do a similar job, but it's one of those things where I would probably recommend it as the industry standard application for creating websites. It's a bit like, it's like Photoshop. It's like, you know, if you're going to go for a photo editing tool, there's a lot of free ones that do quite a good job, but Photoshop is like the kind of one that gets used out in the real world commercially. I'm going to take these things off there, giving me a headache.
Dreamweaver a lot become easier to use years ago? Or is it still much